All right, let's talk careers. Yep. The thing that I'm intrigued by at the moment is that for the first time since probably the 70s in this country, if you want a job, you can go out and get one today.
Well, unemployment's, what is it? According to Stats NZ this morning, and this is a quarterly reading. So if you follow New Zealand statistics, they do, have done, been doing these weekly kind of updates with regards to, I think you need to get that text, just in case. So they do weekly updates, but this is the official quarterly reading for unemployment statistics within New Zealand, and it's down to 3.2%. So that means approximately 93,000 people are unemployed. So that's a pretty good thing, right? But on the flip side of that, you have to understand there's a second reading that isn't quite so often talked about. And I think that this is something that's really, for me, really important in the landscape of employment and seeking employment is underutilisation. So the underutilisation rate of New Zealand at the moment is 9.2%.
Right.
Which is considerably higher.
What does that mean?
Okay,
does that mean people aren't working?
Different ways to explain.
People are not working 40 hours a week?
A little bit about not necessarily working to the full capacity or within the full capacity. But underutilization rate is equally, as I'm reading this, but just to give you an accurate, as important as the underemployment rate is, it gives a broader measure of the untapped capacity in the labor market.
Of course.
Can you hear that? With the trucks going by.
Doesn't matter.
Okay. So, underutilization reflects people who are unavailable to start work but are looking for work.
What? Hold on, that's a contradiction. How can you be
unavailable to start work?
But they're looking.
Well, yeah, they're looking. They're looking for work. So they might not be available to start tomorrow, but they're currently looking.
Well, they might be able to start next week.
Okay, so let's put that in the context of someone who's returning to work after a familial sabbatical. So they might be the main carer at home for their children or a partner or something like that. So they will have a start date, but it could be 2 or 3 months into the future when their child may be able to go to a kindy or...
Okay.
Yeah.
There can't be a very large proportion of the country,
It's 9.2% of the population. I can't do but approximately three times the amount of unemployed people at the moment.
Well, the other thing too we need to know about the unemployment rate is that if you're working 1 hour a week, you're not counted in that rate.
Yeah, it's a bit confusing, hey, the whole like what counts as unemployed and what counts as underutilized.
There's also when a few years ago in National government, they changed the definition of unemployed and suddenly the unemployment rate went down 1.5%.
Yeah, but for a lot of people, they weren't unemployed and they were categorized incorrectly.
Yeah.
So, a lot of sole parents aren't unemployed. They are literally working in their family for their children, you know.
They're busy.
Yeah, very busy.
Yeah.
And, you know, for very young children, you don't always have that. Although our childcare facilities are incredible, there's not always the desire to be putting a few week old baby into date. Look, Alan's taking pictures.
The microphone viewpoint.
So for me, I think, yes, it's great. We look at this and we turn around and we say, absolutely, our skills shortage in this country has now become something that is apparent to all. Because we are walking past places and they're not open because they don't have the staff to staff a Monday or a Tuesday in a business. And I'm thinking some of our hospitality sector there.
Well, I'm talking to one of our sponsors, Wild Cafe. They said they'd like to be open Thursday nights. They can't. They haven't got enough staff.
Don't have enough staff yet. Yeah.
And that's not so much a lack of skills. I wouldn't call that skill shortage.
It's a live human being shortage. Yeah, it's actually a person shortage.
Yeah.
So for a while now, as a career practitioner, we spend a lot of time considering demographics and labour market shortage and things like that. So for me, this is nothing new. But the whole closing of our borders, we've got families who have got jobs in New Zealand but can't get back from respective countries. You know, so all of that kind of situation is now becoming really, really obvious for us.
So this could be temporary?
You have to ask the government that. But at the end of the day, if we aren't bringing people into the country, like a lot of our tourism industry, it is run by that, our people coming over for their working holidays, having a different experience. So those jobs where they might have a seasonal flux of requiring more staff.
Certainly that's something that's missing from Raglan.
And of course, because we our industry is a we are a tourist town.
Yeah.
So, but you know, there are other organisations that just simply don't have.
Do you know what? We're a tourist town, but actually we've discovered through lockdown that most of our business comes from New Zealanders. But it turns out a lot of our employees come from overseas.
Yeah. I think, though, if you were to talk to the businesses in town, like the tourist gap has been plugged by New Zealanders that may well have travelled overseas but have been in New Zealand and are now spending their holidays in a different places, different locations. So, you know, that's been a great balance. But if you are looking to build a road, for example, or, you know, a heavy civil engineering, in a civil construction project, and they're really struggling to find trained, qualified drivers.
Yeah, right.
Right? Experienced, qualified drivers to assist the development of skills in their workforce. Like, this isn't a tourism industry issue. Like, skill shortage or skilled employee shortage is across the board.
There are people available to work but actually don't have the skills. And one of the things that happens, I'm getting to a tricky area here, but one of the things that happens when you have long-term permanent unemployment is you start to get generational unemployment, and some people do become quite unemployable.
Yeah. Well,
And
again, but that's a socioeconomic issue there, isn't it? But yeah, we in New Zealand, we have second or third generation dependent families.
Yeah. And I need to leap in at this point and just say that is part of the neoliberal, the way it goes with the way things have been here since 1984, with Thatcherism, Reaganism. There was an article in the News Hub last year about how they like to keep unemployment at around about 5% to keep pressure on wages.
Oh, I don't know, but that's a really complex issue, right?
That is a factual thing that happens.
I'm going to have to go home and do some.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying that happens. Yeah.
I don't personally feel like it's in anyone's best interest not to be able to be an engaged member of their community. And so for me, employment really, it's about the individual recognizing, let's call it criteria, but recognizing what they want from employment. Almost before that they can turn around and start becoming employees. Because if you actually don't have a very clear idea of what you want, what you're capable of offering, what you would like to develop in the sense of skills or capabilities, then you actually don't have much employment identity. And then it's very difficult to convince employers of your employability. Does that make sense?
Like, it sounds like me when I was young.
A clue of what you can do or what you've got to offer or what you want to do. It's not. I'm not saying they're B, because we're talking about employment identity as part of the landscape of who you are. It's not a complete definition of who you are. So it's about what you're going to do, not what you're going to be. But if you don't know what you want to do for work, then, or how you want to work, then how can you convince someone to take that chance on you? Or how can you convince yourself to go out and take that opportunity for yourself? You know, entrepreneurship isn't about employment. Entrepreneurship is about sort of self-governance and going out there. But if you don't know that you're capable of being an entrepreneur, then, and again, I actually look around Raglan in particular, and I think we have a very entrepreneurial community.
Mm.
So again, we've got that real sort of satellite community feel here. Like you said before, it's very dynamic in the way it's responded to the lockdown and things like that. But that, I think, is about that kind of, it's what draws people to Raglan. It's this identity of being who you want to be and being able to be in a place that celebrates that kind of uniqueness. And yeah, go for it. You want to be, you know, there's window cleaners in town, there's car valets in town, and everybody's like, yep, I want to use your business. But that
takes, it's interesting, isn't it?
Like, that's somebody going out on a limb and saying, you know what, I'm going to have a go at it. And I think that that's something that Raglan community does really, really well for encouraging that kind of employment identity in people.
When people start those businesses up here, and I think, are we too small for that? And then it flourishes.
No.
That's a really common story here.
Yeah. I mean, you honestly, like, if you think about some of the notices that come up on the notice board, and I think about the beautiful people that are growing flowers out, and you see, it's, you know, who would have known 10, 15 years ago that we would have had that kind of industry in Raglan, you know, boutique dairy farm. You know, we've got these guys growing this beautiful market garden food. You know, we've had that with
Kai Whenua.
Thank you. Yeah. Now we've got a second one.
Soul Food Farms.
Yeah. And this is all entrepreneurship. Well, so I think that that's another sense of, they had a sense of employment identity. They knew what they could do. They were able to kind of industrialize themselves enough to be able to commit to it and do it. And here they are flourishing. So I think that that's something that when I talk about employment identity, it's not just about getting a job. It's about understanding how you want to work and why you want to do it.
And that's so important. If people massively are listening to that and it doesn't necessarily make sense to them, it makes sense to me because that describes me when I was younger. And even after I'd got a degree and all that, carry on, I still didn't know any of that.
I mean, my colleague who we work side by side in the Direct Career Guidance program that's still running, which is still available for all New Zealanders whose lifestyles have been affected by COVID-19, their working lifestyles. So 0800 601 301, you can still get free career guidance, and right up until June. So take that opportunity, because it should be a program that runs on, because free career guidance should be the same as going and getting counseling support at the doctors. Like, it is an essential part of your employment landscape, right? You need to do it. You need to do it. Everybody needs to do it. And she would talk about the fact that we have a lot of people coming out with degrees that still don't have an idea of their employment identity. So I come out with this, but I don't know what I want to do. Do I stay in the university? Do I study some more? Well, for me, that's because they really don't have a clear concept of how they want to work, why they want to do it, what they want to do. You know?
Well, if they were like me, they went straight from school to university and didn't have that time to get grounded in the world.
However, there are careers services in all universities. So that identity, that maybe that feeling of going, oh, I'm not sure what I'm going to do next, is something, a voice that we need to listen to. It might not sound quite like that voice, but
if I had that voice in my head, I'd be worried.
But if there is a sense you're getting to the end of your university and you're going, I'm not sure what next, go and talk to your career practitioner at the university.
Part of the issue for me is that there's just a powerful force pushing you through to tertiary education that you don't question it, and then you get spat out at the end of your degree, and you're like, oh. What am I doing again?
Like, that's that whole thing of do and be, right? You know, you've got to go to university and you've got to become and you've got to do that. You know, well, actually, even in the landscape of, okay, I'm going to become I'm going to become a nurse. So, you know, we all have an appreciation of what we think nursing means. But actually, when you open the door to a career in nursing, the possibilities simply are limitless. You know, it is a job that is rewarding and all of those other things. But it is a job that has an awful lot of opportunity within it. So from ward nursing right up through to private nursing, there's so many opportunities now. So if you aren't sure of what you want to do, then you contact somebody that can help you figure it out. And that's what career practitioners do. We really just help you to put your puzzle together. And I use this analogy a lot. Like, everybody's kind of got an idea about what, you know, puzzling is, and, you know, you get the picture, it's all in pieces.
Yeah.
But we really work in that one of, you know, have you heard of the WAS jigs that are back to front? And so you'd have no idea what the picture is you're putting together, because you're responding to a picture that is happen, you know, it's a really complicated way of approaching it.
The picture
that's
on the
your career.
The picture
that's
on
how
the
careers are,
Right, the picture on the box is something
not a
that
guide.
Was in the past, or something that happened in the past.
Yeah, and you're putting the picture together after.
Yeah.
Well, that's what careers
are
like.
That's the future.
That's what I think careers are like. And when we talk about future, we talk about realistically horizons. So the future
horizons
for somebody, because the future's unwritten. We don't know.
We've been
so
learning that
horizonal.
A lot lately.
Here comes the truck.
No, that's pretty quiet.
Oh,
that's just a small refrigerated one. And it's going downhill. It's when they come up Bow Street that it's louder. You're hearing it noisily there, but they probably can hear it over the mic. But the mics are
so
real.
So now how directional. Okay,
it's,
cool.
It's very close.
Technical
small,
term.
Small listening area. So.
So what were we talking about before we were interrupted with the truck?
Jobs.
Puzzles. Jobs.
Puzzles,
so we were talking about horizontal planning.
Horizon,
like, it's really difficult to turn around and say, my future holds. Because actually it doesn't. So we talk about horizontal planning because, you know, once you've reached that horizon, there is another one to follow, but it could be in a completely different direction, you know. So it's not always about the future as such, but a horizontal planning. And then the other thing that I always talk about in careers is, and it's called planmanship. It's a really funny term, but it's about, like, okay, what if it goes wrong? Like, let's not be surprised that things don't work out. Let's actually put some kind of systems in place so that you're able to recognize when things aren't working for you.
Yeah.
And that's something that's really important as well when it comes to thinking about your career landscape and your journey through that landscape. So, because it's not always going to work out. Right. And you aren't always going to have... I mean, the last 2 years have taught us anything that exterior, outside influences have a greater impact on the our whole world than maybe the ones that we think are going to affect it.
So going back to... You just mentioned before that I was about to call it a hotline. We'll call it a hotline.
You can call it a careers hotline.
Your careers hotline.
Yeah, 0800-601-301.
So my first thought was, well, we've just discussed how there's not enough employees, so anyone can get a job anywhere, so do they really need that anymore? That was a thought that came into my head. Mm. And then I knew that your response would be, but we're still trying to get people... into the right jobs.
Yeah, but it's not about just getting any job.
It's not
right?
just for the benefit of the employee. Yeah. The employers need this service.
Absolutely.
At the moment
for
too.
It to be a sustainable employment relationship, right? It needs to be something that is agreed on mutually. Like the candidate, the employee, potential employee, needs to have a really good understanding of what they're bringing to the table.
Yeah.
And then the employer has an understanding of what they want from that employee, but also what they are prepared to invest from their own perspective also, right?
Can we talk about another thing to do with the situation where at the moment there's a shortage of staff? Can employees start to negotiate more now for their...
When you're talking about more, you're talking about the financial rewards
or waging conditions? Yeah.
Well, waging conditions are really interesting, right? Because, you know, for an existing employee, you've got evidence of your skills and capabilities within that workplace, and you should be able to negotiate at some point. But again, it's about looking at the landscape of the business. Is that available within that? You know, it's a tricky question. What you're talking about is negotiating skill. You know, it's your remuneration, right? That's the remuneration package that you're talking about. So, you know, for some people, it might be that actually they want their employer to match their KiwiSaver donate, you know, their monthly input into that. So some people see that as a benefit, whereas other people would say, well, I actually want extended, I'd like 5 weeks holiday this year. A lot of now we're looking at these remoted or blended working, but, you know, again, that goes back to your employment identity. If you know what you're worth and you understand what you bring, and if that comes with a particular skill and expertise, if it comes with years in the industry, if it comes with this as well, then you can talk about it. If that employer can't offer it to you, you might be able to find that there's ways of negotiating around it. If you've got aspirations to study, for example, then that's a point of negotiation for that employer. Look, I can't offer you that, but, you know, I can pay for one of your papers.
I did see a sign on... beside the start of Avalon Drive near the base the other day, basically advertising the great reasons to work at that particular place of work, which I haven't seen something like that since I was a kid.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. And so that is a shifting dynamic. And I think it's scary for employers because they're like, if I have to pay people more,
How do I
cope with that? But from a bigger picture, of course, your staff are also customers.
Yeah.
And so,
an advocate.
If everyone gets paid more, then there's going to be more money being spent.
Well, that's one perspective,
in your,
right?
area. Yeah. I think people need to hang on to that a little bit.
I think, you know, if we look at what that business is doing, is saying, here's the great reasons that we want you to come and work with us, or we have these opportunities within our organization. So they have a strong identity of the ideal candidate. I suppose.
Right.
I mean, they're not just saying, look, we earn really good money and, you know, we get Friday afternoons off and all of those kind of things. You know, for that to happen, they have a strong workplace identity. So that business obviously has something they know is worth advertising for because they want people to come and work for it. So we need an employee that's going to come along and say, yeah, I want to work there and I bring this. Like, I bring these skills and expertise so that I can be part of this team. It's not like I'm just coming to work here because you put that sign out.
Yeah. One thing that this environment does is change that sense of desperation I had when I was younger. Like, I just had to have a job and didn't even think about that stuff you're talking about am I a good fit for this job? It was just like, I have to have a job.
Yeah. And understand it's a process. You know, it's a process. Getting a job is a process. It's not something... I made this comment the other day to somebody. You know, if you get the first job you apply for, then don't buy a lotto ticket because you've struck your lucky numbers. And then the next phone call I got was from a guy who was like, oh, I you know, this circumstance totally changed. was made redundant at the end of the year, hadn't really given it much thought. Someone recommended him for a job. He sat down, had an interview. They offered him a job before he even knew what the job was. And he sort of had to say to him, I'm not actually 100% sure why, like what you're offering. So can we talk about that first? And then I said to him, you sort of, you know, you've gone against my rule of you're not necessarily going to get the first job you want. But from that conversation, what we had to have is an idea of what it is that he wanted from that job, because he was kind of like, it's quite different. They've recognized that I've got these skills, but it's in a completely different industry than what I'm currently working in.
Yeah.
And then when you start to unpack it, it was a little bit more like, obviously, clearly he has all of the qualities they want in an employee, and they are prepared to invest in him. On the other side of that picture is that they weren't necessarily able to offer him the kind of employment criteria that he has. So it's about saying, well, yeah, getting a job is great. Getting the right job is even better.
Yeah.
So if you put the effort into the process, the long-term successes are going to be a little bit more secure.
So how much would you have to? How much more would you have to be paid to do a job you don't like?
I would have to be paid millions and millions and millions.
Yeah, like
why am I going to? But at the end of the day, if I'm in a job that I'm not necessarily getting the rewards from, in an ideal situation, if you'd come and spoke to a career practitioner, then you might be in that job because it meets some of your other criteria.
Yeah, and you should have other criteria.
Right, no, actually, all I want at the moment is income. I don't care what I do. I've done this, but I've actually got this other project on the side, or, you know, I'm trying to get this. So I'm coming to a job for money.
But we're still human beings. We're still individual human beings.
So again, we're talking about that balance, right? If you're in a job that you get up and you're going to work for it, and it is impacting on your mental wellness in a negative way, you are in the wrong job and you need to come and talk to somebody.
Yeah.
It's not fair on anybody.
No, it doesn't work for anybody.
No.
At all.
So that is not the
ideal
situation.
Not the boss, not the customers, nobody.
At all. And you need to come and have some career exploration, design a plan, and then execute that plan to best suit yourself and find employers that want to work with somebody who has the skills and capabilities you have to offer.
So here's a question. For employers, and it's hard to get staff, they don't feel like they can afford to put the pay up dramatically to attract people. How else can they attract people?
Well, I think, you know, you need to start there. You need to start thinking like corporates do, right? And you need to start thinking about talent acquisition. So if you've got good staff in your team already, ask them, who do you know? Do you have people around?
Okay.
Can we find people like you?
Yeah.
And start growing from that pool within. And then you are going to, I suppose, depending on the role, that you are going to think about having two training and committing, but making that into such an investment for the individual that they want to stay.
We've actually got someone who wants to advertise with us at the moment to get staff.
Yeah. Yeah.
And one of their things was, don't worry if you're not qualified, we'll sort that out for you.
Yeah. So you're talking about opportunity. But you need, the ideal candidate will be somebody that wants to be engaged in that process. So there's a give and take. It's a mutual relationship, right? Like, it's not about the employer saying, we'll train anybody. We're going to invest in anybody. No, we're going to invest in the right person, and this is what we have to offer.
Yeah, because
it's going to be successful. So it's about that career identity, and I suppose. And when you have got an unemployment rate as low as we have, and this has existed before. We were in this situation before COVID, where we had more opportunity than we had unemployment. So this has been around for a while, because I was working in this situation before. It was like, well, we've got more jobs than we've got people.
Right, okay.
And it's always been the case.
We weren't really, the rest
but
of
we
us weren't
aware
really,
of it.
No, we weren't, but obviously you
and
were.
And it wasn't
were,
quite
right
as
there.
Low as this as it is now.
Yeah.
You know.
I guess when you say like there's whatever percent unemployment, we've talked about that.
At the moment, it's like it's
those, a lot of those people.
It's 93,000 people.
A lot of those people aren't going to go for the job you're looking for. They might not be qualified to do it. They might not be inclined to do it.
Well, that's right.
They might not be able to do it. Yeah.
Yep.
So yeah, the unemployment percentage is. You've got to stop focusing on that a little bit.
Well, it's all about the individual story. For me, you can have those statistics, but really, if you're struggling to find a job, what does it matter?
Yeah, you could be the only person in the country, but it's your whole life.
It is, yeah. And at the end of the day, it's all about the way that situation impacts the individual. You know, not hearing back, getting rejections, not understanding why. you're not getting the successes that you want for yourself as in an interview.
That thing of not hearing back.
That is, it's a really corrosive position to be in.
I've got a brother-in-law who's a pilot in the UK.
Mm.
And obviously he lost work and he was like sending out CVs. And he considered it a victory when he got a rejection letter, because most of the time he wasn't even getting that. Because I mean, we know what the air industry's been like. So.
Been absolutely... are no words to describe.
It's probably been the hardest hit industry in the world, I would say. Yeah.
But then on the other side of it, we've got one of the other hardest hit industries is the healthcare system.
I'm
working with people who are leaving the healthcare system because of the conditions they've been
in. I'm going to say, do you have a responsibility to turn them around and say, go back in there, kid?
Well, I mean, you know, these have identified for themselves that it's not healthy for them anymore.
Yeah.
So
it's a serious
issue. And it is a serious issue. And again, I don't have the answers for that one, but I do always give, a not worthy situation to anybody that's been through these situations in the last 2 years.
It's interesting, like a few years ago, I was in the hospital for quite a while. Not me, but my mother was in hospital and spent a lot of time there. And it is a real, and even when I'm there for myself, it feels like a really place with such a strong sense of purpose.
Oh, huge.
Like everyone's doing real and important things. Work. And that must add to job satisfaction so much.
Especially when you're there 15 hours a day, right?
Well, this is what I'm saying. For a job that must, I assume, has a huge amount of job satisfaction, so many people wanting to leave it, that's a very bad sign.
And I suppose, you know, not everyone that goes to hospital comes out. And that's what...
No, but most people do.
This particular person, because of the job that he did, he just said, I just couldn't do it anymore. I just couldn't, the outcomes were, I couldn't live
with
the
outcomes.
If you're
working in the cancer area, I think that would be pretty harsh.
Oh, just so many different. I mean, I am not somebody who is capable of doing those jobs, period.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just rubbish. And so, again, I know my strengths and capabilities, it's not there. And so I do applaud anybody highly, and in support of making sure that is an occupation that people want to go to. And unfortunately, I just don't think it is at the moment. The pay is pretty appalling. The conditions are horrendous. Yeah.
Nursing people who are dying is not – that's still purposeful. Mm. In fact, this is something my mother has sort of done. Like, she's really good. She said you'd be terrible midwife, really good with people at the other end of life. And I don't understand that. That's not me.
No.
But some people are wired that way.
They're hugely gifted individuals. And I hope that in the future we really are able to applaud them for the contribution they've made to society over the last few years. Yep. Well, because it's not just COVID. Let's really think about what New Zealand's been through over the last couple of years as well.
Well, we were already – the health system was already at crisis point before COVID.
But we're not here to talk about the health system. We're here to talk about careers.
Sorry.
And I do still think that any career in the healthcare system is a very honourable one and worth pursuing. And yes, we have a massive skills shortage list, but I mean, that's not a reflection of what you can get out of that kind of work. And I do think it is a vocation, it's a calling to be in those kind of professions.
So
in that respect, again, I'm just hugely respectful. And if anybody wants to consider those kind of, well, they want to go for a book, reach out 0800 601 301, or you can find me at careertree.co.nz, and there's just a couple of links you can follow to send me messages, you know. And like I said, most people are able to get free career support through the 0800 number. It just depends on, you know, a couple of people have decided not to because they want to expedite the process because it is slightly longer because we're restricted hours. But yeah, and we're back hopefully in the centre on Tuesday.
The centre is where?
Dinsdale and 5 Crossroads. I know we're some of the only people going back into work under the red, but we have identified there's a large percentage of people that we would normally work with who aren't able to access us due to digital inequities.
This is something you've been discovering in this role, isn't it, the last year or so?
It's been quite alarming, actually. I hadn't really realised, because I think being a migrant, we've relied heavily on digital technology to keep us connected to our families back in the UK. So when I kind of started working, started working at the Dinsdale, working in Consites in October last year, not October last year, the year before.
It's gone so long.
Actually, keep up with the times. But I was really, really alarmed. And the big thing that came through at the beginning, what we were reporting, obviously we've had to report all the way through, but the big thing was like just people understanding what it means to apply for a job online, starting there. And even, you know, having the confidence to start recording the data using a computer, for example. You know, there's so many ways around it, but a lot of the people that we're meeting just didn't have a clue about how to sort of navigate a digital world.
Well, if you can't afford a device, how will you know how to use it, I guess, is
well, that's right.
Thing.
Or even just having, you know, like a lot of people have got a Gmail account. I'm not here to advocate for Google products. That's not what I'm doing. but with your Google account, obviously you get access to G Suite, which is, you know, a plethora of different kind of services that you can have for free. So with a Gmail account, and you can go to your library and you can write your CV, you can do all of those things, and you don't need a laptop. So
but,
we're
but
sitting
I'm
and instructing people just basically on that. And they're like, oh, I didn't know this. You know, so we've got these people writing their own CVs for themselves because all of a sudden we're able to just introduce them to...
But do any of them, let me ask, do any of them get there, sit down in front of the computer and go, well, I don't know what to do. I've never used one of these things or haven't for 10 years.
I mean, we get a lot of people, and sometimes they can be older, you know, more experienced workers who are just like, I don't use a computer. So, I mean, for me, I use a computer every day.
Yeah, right? Same, yeah.
I don't use a drill. I don't use a drop saw. I mean, they're just tools, right? So I wouldn't know where to start. And that's what a computer is a tool. It's not a level of intelligence or a measure of any capability. You know, it's a tool.
Yeah, it's just
so it's about introducing someone how to use that tool. And then confidence grows from the willingness to make a mistake, you know? Control Z, go back. It's okay, you didn't delete the whole thing. The document's still there.
Simple things
build confidence that people will be prepared to make a mistake and have a go. And understand that they can come back from those mistakes, and that's cool. And again, I think that's a philosophy that applies to all kind of working life. Yeah. So yeah, the digital illiteracy is hugely alarming, exasperated over and over and over and over again by lockdowns and restrictions in access to services.
I just want to add in
that is why we're going back into the center under level red.
Yes, of course, it's important. Yeah. I know that there'll be an attitude out there, and probably not much around Raglan, but like, well, those people should just get themselves organised and get on with, and learn how to use computers. But the thing is, we can't afford to have that punitive attitude, because for the country to function and the economy to function, we can't afford to leave. We're clearly at the moment, we can't afford to leave these people on the side of the road.
Like, why would you want to? As a human, why would you just
just looking at the most ruthless way of looking at this.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a ruthless person. I'm not a highly competitive person.
Obviously,
so
for me, either.
I just don't see that we can win anywhere as a nation, as a community of workers, if all of our people aren't supported in the way that they need. Success isn't about the biggest and the best. Success is understanding yourself and creating opportunities that exist with that understanding. Because you and I want different things in life. It's as simple as that. Like, we might have shared values and shared ethoses and things like that. But the reality is, you might not want to go home and talk to your houseplants the same way I do.
Houseplants?
Right, yes. I am a houseplantist.
The only ones that listen.
They are the only ones that listen in my house. No. But you know what I mean? Like, we don't succeed as a country unless success is the focus of the individuals in their world. And they are the experts. So therefore, if they're able to understand and achieve in that concept, then we will achieve as a nation.
And that's the thing that COVID has made apparent, is just how connected we all are.
Yes.
That if some members of our culture are suffering, then it does affect us all.
Yeah. I mean, you know,
it might be just we can't get a coffee. But
like, I don't come from I've never been a military personnel, but I am surrounded by them. Like my dad, my brother-in-law, my wonderful life partner. And there's an ethos that comes from that, is that you are only as strong as your weakest link. And if COVID has taught us nothing, our weakest links aren't necessarily people that we perceive to be weak, because the survival tactics of people that have had struggles with employment are very different to people who have never been unemployed in their life, and all of a sudden COVID's taken those jobs away from them. So our survival we have a lot to learn from everybody within our community. And when you take all the trappings away, we are still people. And so success doesn't come from what you get. It comes from who you are and how you can contribute, my definition of success, and how you can contribute to the world that you live in. And so that's individual, right? I suppose that's really highfalutin, but at the end of the day, you get the point, right? I think you do. I don't know. Listeners might start ringing in and going, what's she talking about? But or they've turned off by now. I don't know.
Well, it's an important story to keep telling, that one, because for years we've just focused on you get the job and you earn the money, and that's what it's about. And that's the message I got as a young person. And people say, oh, you could do this, that's good money. And no one said to me, oh, you could do this job, it's really suited to who you are. Mm. I never didn't get that as a teenager.
But then you go, oh, I don't know who I am. And I'm like, oh, cool, because but also, let's work that out.
No one was suggesting that I should know who I am, right? They're just like, oh, that's a good, you could do that.
Yeah.
Hey, just one thing to end on, like you've talked about the service as something for employees to come to.
What about employers?
Can they come to you guys as well?
Yep.
So do they ring the same number?
Yep.
So they say, I've got
employers that are like, I don't know where to start. Like, I need an employee and I don't know where to start.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, well, let's define who this person could potentially be. What do you want them to do? What kind of qualities would you like them to bring into the workplace?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, some people I work with, look, it can be a really complex affair in the sense of you go to work and you've got all the right capabilities, you can do all those things, but personality-wise, you're not a match. And that wasn't apparent at the time because they wanted somebody who was a systems administrator. But they didn't realize on the other side of that they needed somebody who had social skills or to fit in with their company culture. So when you're looking for the right employee, I think it also starts with, well, how do you want to engage with them in the workplace? You know, if you've got a very social employment group and you have social things that you do together, I mean, some businesses go and play golf once a week together or whatever it is, right? They might have a social football club. And you've got a new employee, somebody like me, very unsporty, couldn't think of anything worse. Couldn't think of anything. So all of a sudden, like, I might have all the qualities that make me the right candidate, but actually not make me the right colleague. But if that's not included, we are a very social group, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
In the ad, it's going to draw the right people, but it's going to reflect the people that might not be interested in playing social hockey. Or I don't know, is hockey social? I don't know. But
well, it's a team sport. It must be.
Like, are you a team player? Yeah, I am. But please don't ask me to play in goal because I hate losing and I'm really rubbish at getting. You know, like, that's
the team's got
a little bit more.
The team's got to care for the player too.
I could be your best cheerleader. I will cook the sausage sizzles, you know, but don't ask me to play the game.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I suppose.
So employers can come to the service too.
If you are somebody that's really wanting to help to find the right employee, absolutely. Come and talk to us. You know, if not, there are other organisations that exist all over Kirikiriroa, all over Itiroa, which is their employment services. So we work closely with those through our projects in the Ministry of Social Development. Kota Pacifica, that's just one off the top of my head, they have work brokers. So if you have a job and you're struggling to find employees, there are people that will actually work on your behalf to help find them.
Do you pay for them?
No, you don't.
Ooh.
But also if you're working with people that are going through the work and income system, the work and income system can help you to onboard these new staff members as well. So, you know, we are in a time, we are in unprecedented times globally for so many different reasons. But in New Zealand, we really do have the opportunity to get good employees into meaningful work, meaningful for them to be successful for our whole country if we play the game in the way that means if we play the game right, I suppose.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying I have all the rules to that game, but understanding who you are as an employee and what you want as an employer is a good place to start, right?
Yeah, yeah. So give us the number.
0800 601 301 or Google free career guidance and it will come up. Or go to Careers NZ and scroll down to the bottom of their homepage and it's on the bottom there.
Okay.
Or Google Natalie Sims Career Tree. And my website will come up and you can message me directly through that.
Okay.
Or contact Work and Income. Or contact...
Have you seen this before?
You can Google Connected. So all Work and Income sites in New Zealand have a space called Connected. And this is their employment focus zone. So they have terminals. You can use computers. They have people like me that go work there. They have work brokers that hold seminars there to put you in contact with other opportunities. You do not have to be unemployed to access services through Work and Income.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you for coming in, Natalie.
I didn't come in. Make that really clear.
Oh, yeah.
I
sat She's sitting in the doorway. And if you look over your shoulder, you'll see that it's raining.
It is raining.
Yeah, so we made the right decision not to do the interview. Otherwise, we would have scampered by now.
Yeah. Hey. But also understand, like, it's, you know, if you are thinking about changing your job, do it in a way that makes you more informed about who you are and what you want, so that you're not just plugging gaps.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because meaningful employment doesn't come through just plugging gaps. It comes through understanding yourself and what you have to offer and becoming an asset to you as a person.
Yeah. All right. Thank you for coming, not in, but near.
But near. Yeah. Thank you for having me in the doorway.
Yeah. So I'm gonna hit play on the music here and then
0800-601-301.
Don't make any noise because I've got to walk upstairs and turn our mics off.
Like, should we make little farting noises when you walk up the stairs?
No, thank you. Here's Anthony Tonin, Peacetime Orders.